Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, it can be frustrating getting around Miami-Dade with traffic. And for people who live in Miami Beach, you know the clutter of cars to cross a couple of bridges. Well, the Miami-Dade County Commission recently voted to move forward with a potential bid for the potential construction of perhaps a monorail across Biscayne Bay. The casino company Genting, which owns the land where the old Miami Herald building once stood, would like to build it. How do you feel about that? What questions do you have about the project? Who would use it? Would you? Well, we heard from some of you, like Stuart in Hallandale Beach. I think passenger ferry service between downtown Miami and South Beach is a better option than a monorail. There would be no disruption of traffic for construction to provide the service like monorail construction on the MacArthur Causeway would entail. Like a monorail, road traffic would not affect ferries. It would be an even more beautiful, enjoyable, and short ride. Again, find us on Sundial at WLRN Sundial on Facebook or Twitter. Let us know your thoughts, your questions. Joining me now is Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez. Mayor Jimenez, thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure, as always.
All right. There's been conversations about trying to, you know, figure out the best system of public transportation to get between Miami and Miami Beach for many years. Why is this happening now? Why this conversation? And we'll get to the details, but why this conversation now about a monorail?
Well, the only reason we're talking about a monorail is we got an unsolicited proposal about a monorail and a monorail system and a very detailed proposal that would propose to build a monorail from Miami Beach to the Genting site. There was very detailed, a lot of detail on the financing of such a project, how much it would cost, how much they would we'd be asking of the county government, state government, no federal funding involved. And there was a significant amount of money that was going to be put in by the private sector. And so whenever you receive an unsolicited proposal, and this is guided by the law, by the way, whenever the county receives an unsolicited proposal, and remember, it's the term unsolicited, nobody asked for it.
Genting came to you?
Yes.
Okay.
And then there is a process, and it's actually laid out in state law. If you have a good idea, and if you have a way to finance it, and you think it's something that would be beneficial to a government, any government, city government, state government, county government, you can, in the way the county government, you have to pay a $25,000 upfront payment for us to be able to use that money for the evaluation of your proposal. And so my duty as mayor is to look at a proposal and say, okay, does it solve a problem here in Miami-Dade? Actually, you know, Baylink, the solution to Baylink, it is a problem that we've been talking about for a long time. Is it financially feasible? And the way the finances were laid out in the unsolicited proposal, it is feasible. So my duty as the mayor is to take and go to the commission and say, look, we have an unsolicited proposal. It solves a problem, and it is financially feasible.
You like the proposal. You asked the commission to vote, let's open the bid. And last week they voted, say, okay, let's open a bid.
It's not that I like the proposal. What I say is, does it solve a problem, and is it financially feasible? Yes, it's financially feasible, and it solves a problem, and it needs to be looked into. And now, what we proposed and what happens is, we then issue an RFP, not based on this unsolicited proposal. The RFP that we're going to be putting out on the street is going to say, we are looking for proposals. These are now this is a solicited proposal.
We're asking companies to bid
on the technology. Could either be a monorail, it could be a metro mover, it could be bus rapid transit, or it could be light rail, because those are the modes of transportation that are being studied today by Parsons.
And that's the study that you're doing right now.
Correct.
When is that study supposed to be done?
It's supposed to be. We're supposed to go forward with some kind of a locally preferred alternative or alternatives, because it's a much broader area than just Baylink, sometime in the fall. And so the process of actually writing the RFP will take at least a couple of months, and then we're asking the city of Miami and Miami Beach to help us in writing the RFP. The RFP, once written, then goes back to the commission, and they will either approve or disapprove the RFP, the wording, et cetera, what we're asking for. And again, We're not settling on any kind of technology. We're not settling on any kind of mode of transportation. We're not settling on any alignment. We're not settling on any. Or it has to start here. It has to end here. You can use your own imagination. We will be asking for, okay, what is it that you're proposing, and what is the financing of it? How do you expect to? What do you expect from the government, and what do you expect to put up yourself?
If the commission accepts that RFP at that point, then they open up the bidding.
It goes out into the world for 6 months. So companies have 6 months to then put together their teams, et cetera.
Is that enough time, though?
Of course it is. RFPs don't normally last, you know, that long. And so people have right from now 8 months, really, at least 8 months, because we're now preparing an RFP.
So but Genting has the upper hand because they put it forward first.
Yeah, but Genting also took their risk. I'm doing their, you know, they put up their money first, and they put up their risk that they could give us an unsolicited proposal and say we're not interested in. And so they have put up their money and their risk, whether we would say, yeah, it's something that we think it's feasible. But any other company in the world could have done exactly the same thing. That is the unsolicited proposal process, which allows you, if you think you have a good idea, to keep your idea kind of silent, okay? It's intellectual property, okay? That you, okay, I have this idea, and I want to put it forward to a government, whatever government. And by the way, this is all guided by law, state law.
But being an unsolicited proposal, it also allows for some secrecy. I mean, everything has to be open.
Correct.
All right, so, I mean, that comes up on the issue of transparency. And you're asking voters again to have faith in a system. We can't see it all.
You will see it all, actually, because you the
not at the beginning. We have to wait until
it doesn't. But really, the beginning is the unsolicited proposal. All we do is it viable? Is it something that can be financed? Does it solve a problem? And that's it. The next process is completely open, and where the people have the right to weigh in on a number of different stages. Number one, they have the right to weigh in on the process of writing the RFP. The RFP will be brought back before the county commission in a public hearing and said, this is the request for proposals that we would want to put out in the street. That's one. The request for proposal goes out in the street. Then there is an evaluation process of all the responses, and then a vendor is either recommended or none of them are attractive enough, is not recommended. It goes before the county commission. All of the proposals are put on the table. All the proposals are seen and have the light of day. And then the county commission determines whether, A, they want to accept one of the proposals or they want to reject the entire thing. The unsolicited proposal, what it does, it spurs a public process. And that's where people, you know, don't understand. They think, oh, this is all cooked. It's behind the scenes. It's people are negotiating. We're not negotiating with anybody. I mean, we don't negotiate with anybody. You give us an unsolicited proposal. What we have to do by law and what my duty is to look at it. Is it a good idea? Does it have merit? Is it financeable? Is it something that needs to be brought forward to the commission?
And you said a couple of times already that this helps solve a problem. What do you see as the problem that needs to be solved?
The problem is what we've been talking about for 40 years, some kind of a connection between Miami Beach and downtown Miami, a Bay Link. We've been talking about this for 30 or 40 years. So, yeah, it kind of solves that problem.
What can you tell us about their idea and how it would solve that problem?
Their idea, a lot of it is already public, but I had to, you know, one of the things is that the company allowed us actually to reveal more than what the law says that we can reveal. So we actually had to get a letter from them saying, look, we have to reveal something because a lot of this stuff is so, the community is speculating all over the place about what this thing is, that they're way off. And so the project is going to cost their proposal, not the project. Their proposal says that they could build a linkage between Miami and Miami Beach for about $400 million, in the area of $400 million, and that they would be putting in more than $150 million of their own money, that requesting about $100 million from the county and $100 million from the state, and then some money from the cities of Miami and Miami Beach. They would then construct a monorail. They would operate, they would design, build, operate, and maintain a monorail. They would be looking for operations and maintenance payments that are substantially less than the O&M payments that we have to make for the South Dade Rapid Transitway that we're developing.
They're operating it. What about oversight? How much of it, I mean, does the county have the oversight on this project?
Of course. I mean, they would have to abide by a contract. Whoever wins this and whatever iteration it takes, at the end, the county has the oversight of it. You have to abide by a contract. You have to have certain performance measures that you must keep in order to get any kind of either availability payment or payment for operations and maintenance or whatever it is that comes out of this process.
Real quickly, what do you think about the fact that, I mean, recently you had both Republican senators, Marco Rubio and Rick Scott, say they've got grave concerns about this. Mm-hmm. And especially their words, fears of espionage from a foreign power. Genting is Malaysian, but there's a Chinese connection.
Yes, it's BYD. Now, BYD is not a Chinese state-controlled entity. Actually, BYD, the majority stockholder, as far as I know, is Warren Buffett. That's the company. And now, but they do manufacture in China. So what I've responded to that letter by saying, I too share in their concerns. However, the law that they looked at says that any federally funded transit agency cannot use, you know, these companies. And what I point out to them is that, look, there's you left out in a huge loophole in that a lot of local communities are going to be looking at public-private partnerships, and there may not be a need for federal money. So if you're talking about the safety and security of the nation, then you need to close the loophole. It says any project with companies that are state-controlled by the Chinese government. You cannot participate. You cannot purchase that kind of rolling stock. I agree with them, and I think that's something that needs to be done. But absent that, I have to abide by the laws of the United States and the state of Florida. And so I need, you know, right now there's nothing that says that we can't. They need to modify the law to protect the American citizen.
What have you spoken with Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber? He's spoken
yes.
out and said he's got issues
yeah,
with this because
sure.
he doesn't want a monorail that's just going to take people to a casino. They
Correct.
Want to build a casino there, but that has not been
no,
decided.
I mean,
but
right.
you know what he said.
Of course. But by the same token, there is nothing in the unsolicited proposal that talks about a casino or tied to a casino. The Genting obviously is a casino company, but it's going to be pretty hard to get casino gaming any additional
it
expansion.
Still needs state permission.
Yeah.
The state hasn't decided.
No, it needs the vote of the people of the state of Florida, 60%, because there was a change in the Constitution. Now, can they purchase one of these existing gaming rights like a Magic City Casino? They could do that, all right. But one of the things, the way to handle that would be through zoning, and I think the city of Miami has already put together a pretty stringent restriction on the expansion of gaming. And I understand where the mayor of Miami Beach is coming from, and I may not disagree with him. But again, this is an unsolicited proposal. It doesn't mean that is the company or the area where
they have
this
to win the bid.
Exactly.
And, okay. Real quickly, just to finish up on this conversation on this is, how long have you been talking with Genting about this? And we did get a tweet from one of the listeners, Rodrigo Gonzalez, asking, have you ever received campaign contributions from Genting? But
yes.
What's your connection with Genting?
Yes, I have received campaign contributions from Genting. I've received campaign contributions from the Fountain Blue, from people that would be opposed to this. And so, in my last campaign, I think we raised about $8 million, people that were for and against. Look, at the end of the day, I look at it, what is in the best interest of Miami-Dade County? This is a public process. It doesn't matter. The final decision will be made by the Board of County Commissioners. It's not made by the mayor of Miami-Dade County. I have a pretty good reputation in this town for being honest and above board and being very ethical. Did I get campaign contributions? Yep, I got campaign contributions from a whole lot of people. Some people are probably going to be in favor of whatever comes out, and some people are going to be against. I just I put that aside and say whatever's in the best interest of Miami-Dade County, that's it.
Just to mention, we will have Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber tomorrow on the program. We're talking right now with Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez. And again, we talked about this idea of a monorail going between Miami and Miami Beach. What was that unsolicited proposal? Where is it going right now? Obviously, a story we'll keep following. You could keep posting your ideas and questions on our Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Let's move to the budget proposal you had. This one is going to be your last one as mayor.
No,
you have one more. My
yes,
apologies. You have one more after this.
Yes.
But looking at this one, this is an $8.9 billion spending plan that you have for the county. You keep property tax rates flat. What's the highlight for you of this year's plan?
The highlights is that the highlights are A, number one, there's no tax increase, and B, we're increasing services. We're, for the first time in over a decade, actually filling all of the positions in the police department. We're adding 90 additional police officers. We're going to put three more fire rescue units in service. We have increases in service, throughout the county. We are also embarking and hoping that the commission approves a spending plan of about $1.8 billion over the next 20 years to rehab all of our existing facilities, especially parks, and then those aging county facilities that we've been using a lot of money just in emergency repairs. We can take that same money and actually start to rebuild those facilities and to strengthen our infrastructure to become much more resilient county. So that's basically the highlights of it. We're increasing library hours by the most. We're going to now have the most library hours ever in the history of Miami-Dade County.
No price hikes on train or bus rides?
No, we are not. Although required by the code, I'm going to recommend that we don't have any hikes in our transit fares, and so they should remain flat. At this time, we want to expand transit. We are right now looking at we contracted with the Transit Alliance to look at a way that we can make our bus system more efficient and much more usable. There on that
more
plan
efficient,
is,
but expansion without raising the rates. How do we do that?
I didn't say it was expand. I said more efficient use.
More efficient, but there was expansion. There's a question of expansion, especially of the rapid bus system.
That system, yes, but that's part of the smart plan, and so we're looking to expand and begin that process of the bus rapid transit, and we want to have gold or platinum. Bus rapid transit is going to be nothing like you've seen. It's not buses like you've seen today. It's a different kind of system.
Discussed on the show. Yeah,
we'll have level boarding. The doors will open. It'll be prepaid, and you'll have a complete right of way on the busway, where you get priority.
Keeping the rate flat, though, yeah. Is there any concern with safety? I mean, this was a story that didn't get a lot of attention. There was a derailment of the Metro Rail not too long ago.
Right.
No injuries, but
it was human error.
Yeah, but I mean,
it was human error.
Is there any worry though of safety?
No.
You still,
No.
Okay.
There's a lot of people went out and said, "Oh, look, the system is bad and it's unsafe." But yet, that was human error.
But you still have to pay for it. Maybe is it because we've looked at this issue about do we have enough people, enough training? It's human error. Yeah, but that has to be. We have to pay to fix that.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
But again, it wasn't because there was some kind of an issue with the track or anything with the signalization. It was human error, and it may have been human error on both sides, both at the control and at the train. So that's something that we're looking at. There's nothing wrong with that track. There was nothing wrong with the signalization. There was nothing wrong with the red and the green lights. We have to pass federal standards, and we do. They have the Miami-Dade Transit has sufficient money, the money that they need in order to maintain the Metro Rail system that we have today. We are getting brand new buses as we speak. They're CNG, and we're adding more and more every single day. So the bus fleet is becoming newer and newer. The Metro Rail fleet is going to be completely new by the end of next year, and so you'll see, and you won't see any more of the silver Metro Rail, the old silver Metro Rail trains that have been running around since 1984. There'll be the nice blue ones, and those are brand new. And so we have making a lot of improvements to Miami-Dade Transit.
Let me finish with this, and not to kick you out of office yet.
Sure.
I apologize about
yes.
that, but it's just look legacy.
Yeah.
When you think about legacy, especially transportation's been a big one for you. So, look,
yeah.
We had the monorail question, the issue with, the bus rapid transit, and now MDX in the fight with the state. But what is it you're trying to build when it comes to legacy, especially transportation?
The only legacy that I want to build is that I left Miami-Dade County in much better shape than when I got it. And believe me, Miami-Dade County today is in much better shape than when I got it. And so it's not about things. It's about our quality of life. It's about the jobs that we have here. What have we transformed Miami-Dade? When I became the mayor, Miami-Dade had an unemployment rate of over 12%. We're at about 3.5% now. We are now transforming the economy from just from real estate and tourism, and we're becoming more technology-based and service economy. The expansion of the airport, the expansion of the seaport, the creation of jobs. That's what I wanted to do, and also leave Miami-Dade on a sound financial footing. When I first got in office, we were looking at a $400 million budget. Deficit. Well, we cleaned that up. We tightened our belts. We made some sacrifices, and now the Miami-Dade County government is in much better condition. And I think also Miami-Dade County as a whole is in much better condition than when I became the mayor. That's going to be my legacy. Are there going to be some other things that, hey, look, you got that built in? Yeah, that's fine, but that's not really what I'm about. I'm about leaving something better than when I got it. And I think that at so far, I still have another year, over almost a year and a half. I think we're well on our way.
He's done with office in 2020. That's what
November. The end of 2020.
Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. It's barely been a couple of weeks ago when we found out that Genting, the Malaysian casino company, pitched an unsolicited proposal to Miami-Dade Mayor Carlos Jimenez to build a monorail between Miami and Miami Beach. Now, there have been talks about trying to build some form of transportation between the two cities going back to the 80s. Being an unsolicited proposal, there didn't have to be too many details made available to the public, and there likely won't be until the bidding process is open and bids start coming in from other companies. Mayor Jimenez was on the program yesterday. He told us why that proposal remains a secret. He told us why he decided to push it forward. One vocal opposition to the plan, Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber, and he joins us now. Mayor Gelber, great to have you back.
Hey, how are you?
I also want to mention, too, by the way, we'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on this. What do you think about having that monorail? What do you think about Genting building that monorail if they win the bid? Share your thoughts. Find us on social media, Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. If not, you can email us, sundial@wlrnnews.org. If you have questions for the mayor, post them there. We'll try to get them in. All right. When did you first hear, Mayor Gelber, when did you first hear about this proposal by Genting and then Mayor Jimenez trying to get the Miami-Dade Commission to go ahead and open up bids?
Well, first of all, it's a little early to be for or against the proposal because we haven't seen the proposal. I heard about it when everybody else sort of did. I had heard a rumor that there was this interest happening. But understand something first. There's a smart plan for the region that expects that there's going to be some mass transit option, whether it's a bus rapid transit, whether it's light rail, whether it's monorail. That's something our city has embraced over the years because we have serious, as much of the community does, serious congestion issues. And as a barrier island with two or three arteries only coming over, we can get backups and our people want to move to and fro, as do visitors.
And there's a study going on, we'll talk about in a second, a study going on right now about what the best to do.
The challenge, there's a couple challenges. The first is when you get an unsolicited bid under state law, then you send out the idea of the bid to the marketplace to see who else might be interested. So it's a, quote, competitive process. Of course, the problem is the bid that is being sent out was Genting's vision of what it wanted, and therefore it sort of becomes a vendor-driven process. And what I mean by that is it's something that Genting thinks works for them. They have a lot of land right around the Miami Herald site, which they own. They've been trying to put a casino there for a decade. So they have their own reasons for wanting it. That may or may not be good for us, but it's vendor-driven. And for me and my community, what's most important is that whatever template is being pushed forward, the connections, the mode, whether it's light rail or monorail or bus rapid, whatever that is, that be the best for the community, not the best for a particular vendor. So obviously when the vendor sends an idea and the RFP goes out, if it's exactly what the vendor wanted, then other options may not be available. And my concern is, and our commission voted yesterday on this, we want to make sure, first of all, that this process doesn't just limit itself to the Genting option. We want what should happen, which is all the possible options that are good, because what's best for the community is what should guide the RFP, the request for proposals, not what's best for the particular initial unsolicited bidder, which in this case was Bending. So to your point, Parsons, there's a study going on right now that's scheduled to be released late in the year.
So, you know, the commission votes to open the bidding 6 months. Companies have 6 months. Anybody who wants to bid, 6 months to make their bid. Then we could start seeing other proposals.
We haven't seen the Genting proposal yet.
Right. No, and we won't be able to until they put that forward.
So, yeah, I mean, look, what should happen is what's best for the community is what should guide this thing. Typically, what would happen is this Parsons study would come back and say, we think this is what the best proposal would look like. This is what mode you should use. These are the connections that you should use. And it would be based on the metrics and data. That's not ready yet. So instead of waiting for that, we're doing the RFP first. Now, by the way, our city's sort of stuck in this process, but we have asked the county to issue the RFP as robustly as possible. So all ideas in the marketplace are available. We've asked them to wait as long as possible so the Parsons study can inform the request for bidders. And we've also asked for a timeline that allows as many bidders as possible to engage the procurement process, because the last thing we want is something so tight and short and constrained that the only possible option is the one of the unsolicited bidder, which is in this case Genting. And there's a whole nother issue I have with them, which is, of course, the gambling.
Well, all right, before we get to that part, so, you know, again, the commission went ahead and said, yes, let's, you know, here's this
county commission.
The county commission. The county commission said, yes, here's this proposal that's been brought forward by the mayor and by Genting. And so let's go ahead and look at it and talk about opening up the bid, which would take 6 months.
And Mayor Jimenez, and by the way, I have a lot of respect for the mayor. We're good friends. I think the world of him. He has to come back to the county and give that county commission the request for proposal. He wants to go out into the marketplace. And
right.
So it's important. That's why yesterday.
Which could take another couple of months from
now. It's going to happen in September, I believe, right. August or September. And yesterday, my commission basically passed a resolution saying, hey, your RFP needs to be dynamic. It needs to be robust. It needs to embrace all possibilities. It needs to listen to what the Parsons study says, because that's science and engineering. So we were really hoping that that the vendor doesn't drive the process, but what's good for the community drives the process.
Have you talked to him?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He, by the way, and you know, people think there's all these backroom deals. The truth of the matter is, you know, we try to be very transparent. Mayor Jimenez called me when the thing came out, and I had expressed some of my concern. And, you know, so, and he came to our committee meeting, our commission meeting yesterday, Monday, when we had a workshop on this, and answered our question. So I don't have any complaints at all with Mayor Jimenez. I think he understands that he got this unsolicited bid and now they got to do something with it. And we just want to make sure what they do with it is the right thing. And I have some measure of faith that they'll listen to at least some of what we say, especially since we've got to give $20 million to the proposal if it comes in.
But as you said, the other thing too is yes, you can open the bid, but Genting has the upper hand because they already had the plan in place and they working
right.
with
they've
a company.
Assembled land. They have a, you know, this is a pretty big option. That's a $500 million to $1 billion, whatever it's going to cost. You got to assemble land. You've got to do studies. You've got to, anyone who's bidding on it better have an ability to do it. So instead of 60 days, 6 months is much better. Longer is better, frankly, because we want more options and more competition. Mayor Jimenez has said he wants more competition. So I'm not that, I mean, I'm worried because I don't know what's out in the marketplace. But of course, if the plan that comes back is unacceptable, I think, you know, we don't have to take the bid.
Right. And of course, the other thing that was published out there was your concern that if Genting gets it, then yeah, they also want to build a casino there. And you don't want a monorail right. That's just going to lead people to a casino.
Yeah, I mean, here's the issue. I've been head of No Casinos. I actually drafted the amendment that's in the Constitution now. I've been because I really believe that a mega casino in the mouth of downtown, in the mouth of the causeways to our city, would be disastrous to the economy and our quality of life. If we spend all this time and money and resources and endure this disruption, and all we've done is built a monorail that brings a lot of people to a big casino, we will have done a huge disservice to the community. And Genting is a casino company.
Again, talking with Miami Beach Mayor Dan Gelber, and we're talking about the conversation we had yesterday, which is this look at a potential monorail between Miami and Miami Beach. Genting, the casino company from Malaysia, has made a proposal to build it, but again, Miami-Dade Commission now has to open up the bidding, which could take some time. Who would build it if there is a winning bid? All right. We did get a tweet that came in, and we want to hear from you. Your thoughts on this. Your thoughts on what you heard yesterday, what you're hearing today. Find us on Facebook or social media, on Twitter at WLRN Sundial. John Smith tweeted us this.
John Smith.
I know, right?
Sounds familiar.
Okay. Has Mayor Gelber received political contributions as a state representative or mayor from anti-gaming groups or supporters?
Anti-gaming groups. I'm hoping a lot of anti-gaming people have supported me. I've been against casinos.
Well, we asked Mayor Jimenez if he's gotten any contributions from Genting, and he said, yes, I have.
Yeah, I don't. I imagine a lot of my residents who have donated to my campaigns are vitriolically against casino gaming. When I was in the legislature, I was against it. And by the way, before I ran for office, my father, who is the mayor of the same city, was chairman of No Casinos, as was I. I've been against casinos for decades in public office and in private office. And I have I worked on the constitutional amendment that's in the Constitution when I wasn't in public office. So I have a policy position against casino gaming, and I'm hoping that most of my supporters share that view, because I think it's a great view.
Do you think voters, the state, is going to open up to more gaming?
Well,
because Genting is hoping that happens.
Well, the constitutional amendment that my law firm worked on it, and my law firm defended it in the Supreme Court before I became mayor. What's important about that to understand is that you can't have gaming, a casino in Miami, unless it gets 60% in a statewide ballot. So would Genting do that? Would anybody do that? And the answer is yes, because a casino like the one Genting presented about a decade ago would make billions of dollars for the company. That's what they do. They just suck all the money out of a community. So the question for you is, how much would you spend to make billions of dollars if you had money to spend? And the question is, would they spend millions, tens of millions, $100 million on a statewide election to convince the rest of the state that let's just stick this casino in Miami where, you know, you won't have to look at it, but you'll get the revenue? Of course, it's a real fear. It is an absolute real fear. The amendment that's in the Constitution right now requires a 60% approval, a big approval. Disney doesn't want casinos, and they've been very supportive of the anti-casino effort because it would affect their quality of, I think, life in terms of what kind of tourists, family tourists they attract. I think a casino in downtown Miami would be devastating to who we are. And Norman Braman, who has always fought this battle, has a line that I think is a truism, which he says, name the community you want to be in the United States that has casino gambling. Name who you want to be. You want to be Las Vegas? You want to be Atlantic City? Who do you want Miami to be? And you're not going to find the community. So now, by the way, I don't think Mayor Jimenez wants casino gambling either. But the problem is, it's a casino company. If you date a serial philanderer, don't be surprised if they cheat on you. Okay, it's like, you know, it is a casino company, and that's what they do. So of course we're worried about it. And yesterday my commission passed a resolution in Miami Beach that said we want wonderful connections. We don't think you should be taking 4 or 5 transfers to come here, because we're worried about workers who come to our city. They shouldn't have to take 4 buses. We're worried about all these other things, and we don't want a gaming interest anywhere near this area or in control of it. And we put that in our resolution and sent it over to the county.
Why has it taken so long? Because, again, this conversations about what that connection should be, it goes back to the 80s. Why has it taken so long to figure out the best way to get people back and forth between the two cities?
The complexities of mass transit are created by governmental entities. You've got FDOT, you've got the feds, you've got the county, you've got numerous cities, you've got a forever changing modes. Unfortunately, you're usually solving the problems of yesterday and not tomorrow. And government doesn't move particularly quickly. I would hope that the Parsons study is going to give us some engineering understanding and qualitative and quantitative analysis so that we know who we're moving and what's the best way to move them. For instance, imagine if we built a monorail and you wanted to come to work at the Fontainebleau. So you're from South Dade. You take some transit to get on the monorail. you come to Government Center, you get on your people mover, you transfer from the people mover to the monorail, you get on the monorail, you go over, then you get on your trolley and you get to the Fontainebleau. I'm not sure a lot of people are going to take that, you know? And so what we have to figure out is what works. And frankly, we've sort of liked bus rapid transit in a lot of places because we think it could move people who are our employees. But the challenge of Miami Beach is we're a small city. We're 95,000 people. We get 15 million visitors a year. We have 40,000 workers coming over. Who are you moving?
See, I was about to ask you, what do you think is the best system to move people back and forth, whether it's workers or visitors? Are you saying bus rapid transit?
It's a great question.
Oh, across the MacArthur.
And by the way, I'm a lawyer. I'm not an engineer.
Okay. Well,
what I do is I inform myself with experts. And the Parsons guys are supposed to tell us expertise, as have other studies been done. But I do know this. We have 40,000 workers coming here every day. And they clog the streets. And they endure incredible transportation issues. And they park all over the city. It's not good for us and it's not good for them. We have 250,000 people every day in our city, most of whom are visitors, tourists. They come from the airport and from other places. And we have residents who are going in the opposite direction. So who are we trying to move? I think the workers are pretty important because I think they tend to overwhelm the arteries and they're going to have to come here. And sometimes they're getting dropped off twice a day.
Whether you have a rail or bus system, where does it have to drop off in the city? In Miami Beach, where do you have to bring people so that they can then go off to where they have to go?
Well, the workers are going to mostly the hospital, Mount Sinai, maybe Baptist, but certainly Mount Sinai, and certainly from the Fontainebleau and Eden Rock down, all the Collins Avenue hotels, the Lowe's, you know, all of those places and the restaurants in the area. We have a huge number of service industry folks that come to our city every day, 40,000, including the hospital folks. And we also have, by the way, construction workers who aren't included in that 40,000.
Right.
And we're probably not going to take care of them because they have equipment needs and such. So that 40,000 is most important. They've got to get to Collins Avenue. They've got to try to get a seamless one, you know, where you get on somewhere and you get off somewhere where you can take maybe a trolley or something. And by the way, my city committed $5 million to bus rapid transit on the Julia Tuttle, on the 41st Street Causeway, through a segregated lane. It would be unlikely that many residents would even take it, but workers would, because it's supposed to go up into the northwest area, into the central area of Miami. So we're trying to alleviate our streets any way possible.
Let me finish with this. We get into the bidding process. What can you do?
We've asked the mayor to put at least one of our folks on the selection process. They're going to need the city for a lot of things. They, I think, expect $20 million from us, or at least $20 million. We'll probably have to change land ordinances to deal with the hubs and where. I think Mayor Jimenez has not been an adversary or even an enemy, obviously. He recognizes that we have to be collaborative in this and has reached out in only that way. But we'll have a say in it, and my expectation is we'll even have somebody on the selection committee.
Again, this question about this potential monorail, or what is it? What is it going to go between Miami and Miami Beach has been debated for many years now. Again, the story about Genting putting forward this unsolicited proposal. We'll keep following it. Mayor Dan Gilbert sharing his thoughts. We always appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for having and doing this issue that we are.
Absolutely. And remember, find us on social media. Tell us your thoughts. Find us on Twitter, Facebook. Let us know what you think.